go down, the paranormal comes alive. We go deep into topics the lamestream media won't dare touch. From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon, deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, you're traveling somewhere between abnormal and paranormal, into the paranormal.
You know, I've been reading a lot of books lately. One of the books that I'm reading about right now is actually the book by Frank Joseph involving military extraterrestrial encounters, The Real War of the Worlds. You know, we did that program with him back in July. And I'm going through the information, and in hearing the eyewitness accounts from people who have had these UFO experiences, I am just mesmerized every time I get a witness case. These are people who, you know, in most cases have far more to lose for telling what happened to them than they ever do to profit from their story. In many cases, there are no products to be sold or anything like that. And so you have to put more weight, in my opinion, behind their story. And so tonight on the program, we have three separate witnesses to life-changing events involving UFOs. And joining us first is Mike Orell. He's a photographer and retired graphic designer. In the year 1990, he took pictures of 10 UFOs during the day in July. Again, of 1990, while hiking through the woods in San Diego with two friends. And after having it professionally enlarged, it was then that he discovered that one of these objects matched the acorn shape, which is synonymous with the Kecksburg, Pennsylvania UFO crash of 1965. So Mike's here to make the case that this picture, which we have on the website tonight, and you can see on his website, is the best UFO picture ever. Mike, welcome. It's good to have you here.
That was a great introduction, and that's exactly what had happened. I accidentally photographed what may be 10 Kecksburg UFOs while hiking with two friends in 1990. And I might say that at that time, I only had a 35 millimeter camera, Jeremy, because, you know, digital wasn't in vogue yet. And it's because these 10 objects are embedded in that 35 millimeter negative, which has been authenticated by leading photographers around the world. That makes this photograph, which is called the Inyaha UFO photo, because that's the name of the park I took it at, and you spell that I-N-A-J-A. But, yeah, this is quite an event, Mr. Scott, and thank you for having me on your show so I could share this with your listeners and spread the UFO gospel like the LA Times said that's what I'm doing, because I've made the front page of every newspaper in San Diego because I did link this UFO photograph to the famous Kecksburg UFO that crashed in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, December 9th, 1965. And it was interesting, Jeremy, that episode of the Kecksburg incident was on Unsolved Mysteries, and it aired for the very first time in September 1990, 2 months after I had taken my UFO photograph. And I was recording all sorts of information on UFOs and aliens during the time that my photograph was being enlarged to grain by professionals downtown. And so when I got it back and I noticed that one of these objects, the left contour, exactly matched that Kecksburg UFO. And it goes on from there, buddy, but it is linked to what I believe is the disclosure that even the government, you know, the Pentagon released these UFO videos, and one of them was off the coast of San Diego, which has had numerous other UFO incidents here. And I think that that's going to be possibly a meeting point or ground zero for contact, which I'm hoping.
Yes, very familiar with the Nimitz case. We've talked an awful lot about that. So the audience is certainly well informed about that incident. As far as this picture, what do you believe the significance is of the acorn?
Well, you know, it's an anabolic shape which contains energy. And in the Kecksburg UFO, if your listeners get a chance to check out my Facebook page, I have quite a wall dedicated to the uncovering of this story under Michael O'Rell, O-R-R-E-L-L. And don't miss my 7 books of disclosure, which is on my Facebook page. But this acorn shape, it has to do with the design of it. Apparently, it's been good for millennia because it shows up in ancient rock paintings. I mean, thousands of years ago, you're going to see in these paleo contact artifacts from Mexico that they also have designed into these artifacts the 3 bands that were visible on the Kecksburg UFO. And once again, this is all on my Facebook page. So that is confirming that these ancient paleo contact artifacts are really over 700 or 7,500 years old, because they were able to date some glue that had some organic material in it. And these objects are amazing. I'm sure you're seeing them, Jeremy, but I'm really convinced that this is all concluding to a contact event. And when you see my story on how I've linked this Inyaha UFO photo, which, by the way, I showed to my friend after I had taken it 2 weeks afterwards, and he said, "Mike, those are ducks." And I said, "You know what? I don't see birds or owlons, and I know you're not a photographer, so I'm going to go back out there to the same spot at Scenic Spot 7 at Inyaha Memorial Campground." And I shot birds and planes at the same spot. When I turned to leave, Jeremy, oh my gosh, here's a boulder, and it looks exactly like an alien's head. It's really there. And sure enough, CBS, Channel 8, they saw my story and demanded I take them up there. And we filmed right at the spot I took this photograph, and then they got me with the boulder. And that actual interview from 2006 really actually won first place at the 2014 fourth annual McMinnville UFO Film Festival. That was 8 years after the interview. And you know why? Because I think to this date, it represents the most conclusive evidence for the existence of UFOs and aliens. This 35mm negative has been authenticated as untouched. The objects in there are actually there. And when you watch my CBS interview, which is on my Facebook page, you're going to see the whole story, as well as the fact that I was featured in the San Diego Air and Space Museum for an entire year. When the curator, they had a year-long, it's called the Science of Aliens exhibit, and I contacted him and said, "Hey, I got a front-page UFO story here in San Diego." He looked it up, said, "Bring your stuff in here," and him and his team went through the negative, the photos, and the artifacts, and they designed a great, beautiful marquee that was evidence for UFOs for an entire year. But that's just, you know, part of it. I've also met with the Russians, Mr. Scott, where I had met with Marina Popovich, because I had linked one of their UFO photos not only to my UFO photo, but to the Nazca Lines of Peru, because not only did my acorn shape match the Kecksburg UFO, but I noticed clearly in the blow-up that there was a spike-like projection 2/3 up the left side that I have interpreted to be some sort of communication device. But when I saw that, I realized I had just seen that. And it was in a program called Secrets and Mysteries, which I taped on my VHS. We didn't have DVDs back in 1990. And it was a photograph released by NASA of James McDivitt's UFO photo that he took on Gemini 5 flight over Hawaii. And guess what? It is a projecting acorn shape exactly like my UFO. And, of course, I found about 5 or 6 other UFOs, and they all have the same projection. So this is a lost sacred alien code. And anybody who's seen my Facebook page, and I got almost 3,000 followers, this is quite a story. And it involves also, if I might add, the world's largest natural rock face, Jeremy. Before I ever took my UFO photograph, I had discovered as an art major in San Diego, on the face of a local mountain, is a giant, mile-wide man ape face surrounded by a perfect circle. And I designed a handsome logo of it, and I was marketing T-shirts and hats. And it's actually been on the news. And when I made the front page of the Daily Californian, hundreds of people called in. Half of them knew about it, called it the old man in the mountain. And the other half said, hey, we got a face on our mountain. Well, one of the UFOs was hovering over the backside of this mountain. And I designed that in the cover of my book, which is also on my Facebook page. It's called Aliens from Above, The Last in Line. Now, this is not about making money. This is just about getting credentials so that I can talk to you and your audience about this real story of how the UFOs are coming to planet Earth. And I might add, for a specific reason, which is also on my Facebook page, because planet Earth, by the way, is quite overdue for the next geomagnetic reversal. Our poles are way overdue to reverse, which is a periodic event. Happens every 420,000 years or so, and it's been 700,000 since the last one. Now, aliens who are aware of this and actually postponed the actual shift, thanks to their creations at Stonehenge, Giza, and the atomic blast in 1908, they have postponed the shift, but they can't do it anymore. Planet Earth needs to reboot, and we need to get off the planet's surface. And the only way it's going to happen, Jeremy, is if we get airlifted. So I think that's why I've sort of been chosen for this. You know, I didn't plan on it, but I was set up from the very beginning when my hero cop dad died in my arms at 13, and I wanted to know what happened to him. I discovered metaphysics. And for those of you interested, the top three writers are Carlos Castaneda, T. Lobsangrampa, and the New Age Bible is by Jane Roberts. And they all talked about aliens and UFOs and how they're aliens from God, I mean, emissaries from God who are fulfilling his mandate, which is why they're showing up more than ever. So it's up to the civilians now. I mean, the government has given us a lot, including the fact that last night on NASA's unexplained files, they just released the fact that Commander James Cernan aboard Apollo 17 not only spotted objects on the moon, but accidentally photographed a triangular formation of blue objects. And guess what? In my UFO photograph, I've also captured a triangular formation. And one of Gene's photographs, one of the objects in that triangle formation, guess what? It's acorn-shaped. Now, I just posted this, Mr. Scott, on my Facebook page. So any of your listeners want to check it out for themselves?
So tell us about the day you went hiking with your friends. Where were you at? And, you know, what time of day it was? Was this craft, you know, making any noise? Was it silent? How long did the sighting last? I'm throwing a lot at you there. Can you help fill in some of the details here?
Sure. I owned Darkroom at the time. I was developing my own color film on my Omega C760. It was a lifelong dream. And one of my photographs actually entered and won a contest. So I wanted to go on a photographic expedition with my Canon EOS 650 camera. So I grabbed my girlfriend Ronnie and my buddy Bob, and we hopped in and went to Ramona. And through Ramona, we went to Santa Isabel, that's spelled Y-S-A-B-E-L, and Dudley's Bakery, very famous bakery where I get their fruit bars. And from there, we were heading to Julian when I noticed just 2 miles up the street from Dudley's, a turnout for this memorial park called Inyaha Memorial Campground. It's actually a trail. But the park was there, built and dedicated to 11 firefighters who had died one day before I was born, according to a memorial marker. And as a metaphysical guy, this is like an omen. So my buddy noted that, and then we took this beautiful loop trail to the highlight of the trail, which is Scenic Spot 7, where you're looking at 18 miles of the San Diego River Valley, and they have constructed a periscope device on a rock wall, and this is where I set my camera down. And I did a photographer's trick. I breathed in deeply, exhaled, and in between heartbeats, I squeezed the shutter. But unbelievably, I didn't take two photos. I only took one because guess what? It was dark. I'm in charge of this group, and I had no idea how far it was back to the parking lot. And it was about 4 o'clock, which is why the photo's pretty dark. But these, when I got the film back from Thrifty's 2 weeks later, I noticed in the 4x6 print that there is a formation of objects in this left-hand corner. And I'm looking at them through my loop, and then I blow them up, and I'm going, man, these are uniform in density, and I don't see wings or ailerons. It's not a negative glitch. And that's when I decided to call the, well, after I went back to the spot and I photographed birds and planes, and I discovered this alien rock cave, then I realized, you know, I might have taken a 1 in a billion photograph of real UFOs. So I called the San Diego UFO Society, who got me in touch with MUFON, the world's largest UFO agency, and I became a MUFON field investigator trainee, and they had me send my photograph to, I'm having a brain block, but anyway, it's Naval Photo Analyst McAbee, that's it.
Dr. Bruce McAbee.
Bruce McAbee, thank you, sir. He confirmed that these objects are unidentifiable and opaque. Well, I had already discovered this pattern and linked it to ancient artifacts, so what Bruce said was just sort of, yeah, I already knew that, but it was confirmation from an expert, which I might add, I am not. I'm just a retired graphic designer, a free thinker who loves mankind, and I am sharing this with nothing to lose because I really believe that mankind is at the cusp of contact and that aliens, and you'll see this on my Facebook page, all these crop circles, they are beseeching us to believe, to be prepared. And they know that this shift is coming. Look at the crop circles that I've interpreted, as well as the Nazca lines. And where'd you see what's at Petra? Oh, my gosh. And at Stonehenge, there's a giant acorn-shaped mound, which is their signature, because underneath Stonehenge are a ley lines and electromagnetic forces. And I believe this is why the Earth did not flip on December 21st, 2012. Which was the end of a 26,000-year precessional wobble of Earth's wobble. And the Aztecs didn't know how much work aliens have done to extend this. And that includes flying into volcanoes, and they hang around earthquakes as if they're trying to ease the burden and save mankind. So, you know, it's in the Bible, I think chapter 6, verse 12, that islands will disappear and every mountain moved from its place. And Edgar Cayce said, the shift is going to happen in the blink of an eye, and Hawaii, you're gone. And there's going to be a lot of different coastlines. So I think that the only way the majority of mankind is going to be saved is through a rapture event orchestrated by aliens who have apparently gone out of their way to make themselves known. I mean, look what happened in 1997 in Arizona. That giant chevron-shaped UFO cruising over the whole city. And then, you know, look what's going on here in San Diego. I believe they posed for me, Jeremy. I don't think it was an accident because they knew I wouldn't disregard this photo like a lot of people would have if they had not the belief system that I have, that I believe, because metaphysics teaches that not only do aliens exist, but that actually atoms and molecules, as small and minute as they may be, carry their burden of consciousness, which is how the historic Jesus obviously turned a few loaves of bread and fish into enough to feed thousands, because he was the great psychic, as well as the Buddha. And I think mankind, unfortunately, because we're not taught how to meditate at like age 9, we have forgotten why we're here. The body doesn't have a spirit. The spirit has a body, and we need to remember that and act accordingly. I practice moderation in everything just to remind myself that, yeah, we're all here on a spiritual mission, and even though they don't expect perfection, they do expect us to conform and come into compliance. And, oh, guess what? Every planet has had their own 10 commandments, and when aliens come here, sometimes it's from a different dimension. And when they come into this carbon environment, they have to change their molecular structure. Some of them come from a silicon universe. And sure enough, in a famous crop circle, in reply to our message that we sent in outer space near the Chibolton Observatory, they left a detailed diagram, and it depicted them not only as aliens, but they are made of silicon. They come from a silicon universe. So they had to change their camouflage to get here to be human-like because of our carbon environment. But you know, Mr. Scott, I'm ready for contact, and everybody else should have that attitude because it could happen at any moment. We had no idea when the shift is going to happen. It's going to happen. People ignore it. A lot of science.
So wait, you say you're wishing for contact. So does that mean you're wishing for an abduction or what kind of contact?
Well, yes, actually, because aliens, the people that they do abduct, and yes, they have crossbred and made a large number of in-betweens, half human, half alien, so that after the shift and we get redeposited on our brand new planet Earth, we're going to have teachers to help us relearn why we're here. We're going to learn our spiritual lessons. We're not going to sleep away 20 years without using our dreams properly. And I can't believe I don't know how to meditate properly. We should have been taught all this, Jeremy, in our youth, and we wouldn't have all these mass shootings. People don't appreciate who we are. Each and every one of us is the fullness of God.
Mike Orell, words of wisdom. We owe you a lot for that. And thank you for sharing this picture. I've got it up on the website, social media. Folks can take a look at it and at themselves, and the link is there to his website. Go check it out because he's got a lot of links and resources up there. I think you captured something pretty amazing, Mike.
Thanks, Jeremy.
That's Mike Orell, and we'll be back with another UFO Eyewitness. I'm Jeremy Scott, traveling with you somewhere between abnormal and paranormal.
Don't venture too far. You might not make it back into the paranormal. This is Paranormal News. I'm Brad Bernards.
Scientists are giving you the chance to name one of the 20 newly discovered moons around Saturn. Astronomers say that scientists did not know the moons existed until recently.
Business Insider reports scientists discovered 20 previously unknown moons orbiting Saturn, which gives Saturn a grand total of 82 moons flying past Jupiter's 79. The discovery unlocks a trove of possible new hints at how Saturn and its moons became what they are today. Each of the newly discovered moons is about 3 miles in diameter, and 17 of them are in retrograde, or in the opposite direction of Saturn's rotation. One of them is now the farthest known moon from Saturn. The discoveries join three groups of Saturn's outer moons, clustered by the angles at which they orbit the planet. Scientists think each of those groups may have come from a larger moon that broke apart into smaller bodies. Further study can help determine what sort of collisions created the groupings we see today and what the conditions around Saturn looked like at the time. Nessie has been filmed twice in just over a fortnight, making 2019 already the best for sightings of the legendary beast for 36 years. Both recent clips show Nessie swimming in Urquhart Bay and were filmed August 15th and September 2nd, taking the total so far this year to 16. Elena Horka from the Czech Republic made the 15th official sighting of the creature, filming what she claims is a 30-meter-long Nessie swimming fast toward the castle. Veteran Nessie cam watcher Owen Ufudhagen from Republic of Ireland made the 16th sighting 16 days later. Speaking of his achievement, Owen said, "It's hard to believe I'm the 16th sighting and my fourth for the year." Elena's clip shows a black object in the far reaches of Loch Ness, captured while she was recording the scenery. Elena reckons Nessie could be from a higher dimension that only certain people can see. Interact with the news at ParabnormalRadio.com. I'm Brad Bernards, Parabnormal News.
here to talk about UFOs.
UFOs? What the hell is it?
Flight operations were temporarily suspended this afternoon after reports of a mysterious aircraft hovering above the airport.
All over the world, people have been seeing giant triangles.
We must find out if there's something in our airspace we need to know.
They're massive. They're flying so slowly over us that if it were a conventional aircraft, they'd fall out of the sky.
Originating from a remote location, nearly as top secret as Area 51. Yeah, and if you believe that, you'll really like this show. Into the Paranormal.
UFO eyewitnesses on the program tonight sharing their truth. As I mentioned, these are men who have far more to lose for exposing their truth than they probably ever do to gain or to profit from their story. Joining us is Mike Robinson, who's seen several UFOs in his life, and he's actually shared some pictures with us that he took of UFOs in Arizona and New Mexico, sightings that happened back in 2016. He's joining us from Tucson, Arizona tonight. Good evening, Mike.
Hey, good evening, Jeremy.
It's my pleasure to have you here. Thank you for reaching out to share your story. I'm always intrigued when I get pictures from folks who have seen these, because I have not seen a UFO myself, and so I'm always interested in talking with people who had. Can you tell us how many sightings you have had in your lifetime?
I've definitely probably had over five, I would say.
And most of these were in Tucson and also in New Mexico, is that correct?
That is correct.
And these were all in 2016, or were there ones previous to that?
I've had them a little previous to that and even up to recently, but I haven't been able to capture anything since 2016.
Okay, so when did the first one happen?
Around 2014.
And what happened in that incident?
I just saw a strange craft that I could not explain away, and I had no explanation for it.
Was it making noise? Was it silent? Did it have any lights or anything like that to it?
It was definitely silent, and it had like weird lights on it. I saw purple, yellow, orange, blue, things that are definitely not identifiable to the normal red and green lights that we normally identify airplanes with.
Yeah. And then take us to 2016, because in 2016 you were able to capture some pictures of these events.
Yes. So the first one was the one with the three lights and like the one over it, and I thought it might have been a drone, but it wasn't making any noise. There was no way to really identify it. The person I was with had no idea what it was.
So what do you think it was?
I'm not entirely sure. Like I said, I thought it might have been a drone, but it wasn't making any noise, so I couldn't really tell. And then all the lights kind of shut off, so it was there for about 20 minutes and completely stationary, and then just kind of just shut off.
So just kind of so like out, like if it was a light bulb turning off or on?
Yes, exactly.
So it just kind of blinked out.
It just blinked out.
And you said that in this case there were three lights. Were they in like a triangle formation?
They were kind of in a triangle formation. They were like kind of straight in a row, and then there was one light a little bit above the middle one, and it was just kind of weird. I don't know.
And for 20 minutes, it kind of just sat there idle.
It just sat there idle, completely stationary, didn't blink or anything. It was very strange. I did have a witness on that one, so I wasn't the only one who saw it.
How many other people witnessed that?
Just one other.
All right. That was in Tucson?
Yes,
Arizona?
Yes, that was in Tucson.
All right. And then so you had one, also another incident that didn't last quite as long, from what I understand.
Yes, that's correct. I've had a couple brief incidences where I just look up and I don't have my camera most of the time, and they're just gone.
In one of these pictures, it shows, you describe an orb or a light or a craft or something that disappeared and then reappeared on the other side of another light, like shuffling in the air.
Yes, I have seen that, and I tried to get a picture of it. You can see from the picture there is a brighter light and then a kind of fading light, and that's kind of in between, like, the shuffle movement. The one that's fading is it kind of, like, jumped over to the other side of the bright one, and then they continued, like, that pattern for maybe about 4 minutes, and they just disappeared.
Were all of those the sightings that we've discussed, were all those in the evening darkness?
Yes, most of them were, yes.
And so it was easy to see them if you were looking up, because they stood out.
Yes. Most of the stars hadn't begun to appear in the night sky yet. It was still kind of fading light.
And then we get to you were taking a trip, I'm guessing, maybe flying from New Mexico back to Tucson late at night. We believe this was in April of 2016. And it looks like in this picture, we're not just seeing lights, but we're seeing some sort of craft.
Yes, that's correct. That is what my assumption was, too. I just happened to look out the window, and there it was. And I happened to be able to get my phone out on time, and it didn't disappear on me. And I got what I believe to be a pretty good picture of it.
Did anybody else see this on the plane?
I don't believe so. I was traveling by myself, so I didn't know anyone else on the plane. But I tried to point it out to the person next to me, but they didn't have a clear view out the window.
They thought you were just nuts, right?
Sorry, what?
They probably thought you were just nuts, right?
Probably. Yeah.
And so you've had all of these experiences where you've seen these, you know, strangely moving lights and yet from an aircraft, which is not too uncommon of occurrence of an occurrence. There have been reports previously of entire, planes full of people seeing these craft. We've been talking about military and commercial pilots for the last 2 years having these encounters that date back decades. And so there is something to it about these UFOs, about these craft accompanying aircraft. And I'm not sure why or what purpose they serve. Maybe they're in a protective role, kind of looking out for us. Did you get any sort of sense when you saw this thing? Did you have any sort of feeling when you witnessed this?
No, I was actually pretty calm about it. It didn't scare me. It didn't feel threatening. It was kind of there for a little bit. I tried to get the city I was flying over. I'm not sure what city it is, but I tried to get that in the frame so there's some type of reference to how large the craft is. But it wasn't there very long after I got the pictures and I was reviewing my pictures. I looked out again and it was gone.
Oh, are we in agreement that this is some sort of metallic saucer-like object? That's it appears.
That's what it looks like to me, Jeremy. It looks like a metallic saucer craft.
And obviously, not many more details can be known about it because it was dark. But it does seem to be emitting some sort of glow, either on its outer edges or from underneath. Because as you'll see in the picture, it's kind of shiny on the outer edges.
Yes, I noticed that as well, and that's partially what caught my attention. First saw it.
Okay, so these were taken in the evening. How long did were these aircraft there looking at the window of the plane? How long did you see them there for?
Probably about 5 minutes. They're there for a little bit. But as I said, after I got my pictures and I went to review and I look out again, they were gone.
Obviously, no way to tell whether that one was making any noise or not because you were inside a jet, and so you wouldn't be able to determine that. Did you get a sense of maybe how it was moving, if it was moving, if it was stationary? If it was moving, how quickly it may have been accelerating or how not so quickly? Because we get reports of these craft that are going so slow, you know, you would think that they would just fall out of the sky if they were a conventional aircraft.
Yeah, absolutely. It didn't appear to be moving super fast. It kind of appeared stationary, but at the same time, in my mind, it was probably going maybe about the same rate as the airplane, same speed.
And so it obviously had to be able to fly at, you know, thousands of miles an hour, hundreds of miles an hour, if it was keeping up with that jet.
Exactly.
So, all right. So you said you've had sightings since.
Yes, yes. I was actually with we were just driving to work one day and saw something in the sky, and he's actually the one who pointed it out to me, and we weren't sure what to make of it.
And did it just disappear, or did you just lose sight of it, or
it just? No, it did. It disappeared. It was silver and shiny, and it was going pretty quick. And then all of a sudden, it's just gone. And we both thought to ourselves, how strange. And after that, we saw some military jets flying about. So we weren't sure what to think of that.
Yeah, so it could have been a craft from another world, and our fighter jets scrambling to investigate, or it could have been something from this world, from our own creation, or back-engineered from an alien creation that now we have control of, and these could have been, you know, guarding the aircraft. Do you want to venture a thought on maybe which one of those possibilities is more likely?
It's possible it could have been, like, reverse engineered and it's under our control, but the, when we called to find out anything about any aircrafts in the sky currently, so it was definitely strange, but it could have been, like, some kind of, like, military testing.
Say that again. We missed that one part. You said that you found out that there were no aircraft in the sky in that area at the time.
That's what they said when we called in. They said there was no. They weren't currently flying anything.
Well, and if they were flying something like a stealth bomber or something like that, they probably wouldn't let us know about it, right?
They probably wouldn't.
Yeah. Well, Michael, I really appreciate you coming on and being an eyewitness to some unexplained events. I mean, I don't have an explanation based on these pictures. You know, lights in the sky could be a million things, but certainly in the formation and with the behavior that you have described and that you have documented, I would say that there's certainly something weird going on, and it does certainly look like to me that you captured some sort of silver metallic disc on your flight there over New Mexico, because it's very apparent that we're looking at something, that does appear to be that, so...
Yeah, that one's probably the most plausible one. The rest might be able to be explained away through aircrafts or people who know what type of craft the other ones are. But that silver one over New Mexico is probably the most compelling one I have.
And so because you've seen so many of these in your lifetime, Do you have an opinion maybe on, you know, do you believe that these, I mean, for the most part, are our craft, as we said, you know, reverse engineered, but controlled by us? Or do you think that there may be some alien intervention going on here?
I think it's a good mix between the two. I think it's a good solid mix. You never really know which one's which.
But at least your mind is open that there could be some sort of ETI, extraterrestrial intelligence behind these, whether piloting them from some other dimension or piloting them physically from on board the craft.
Oh, yes. I'm definitely open to either of those and anything else that may pop up, you know.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for sharing your story. I really do appreciate you coming on and being an eyewitness for us tonight here on the program.
Thank you for having me, Jeremy. I appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So that's Mike Robinson from Tucson, Arizona. And the pictures are up. We've put them up. I tried to put them up in the order that we mentioned them. So you can see the pictures and you can judge for yourself whether or not these are actual documentation of something mysterious or whether they're just some sort of camera trick, which, of course, I'm not going to subscribe to. I don't think that they're a camera trick, but who knows? I certainly am no UFO photography expert. Had many people on the program who have been able to analyze some of these pictures. Several, in fact, who have been able to analyze pictures that we've, you know, brought to their attention or pictures that they've collected themselves. But I don't claim to be one of these experts myself. Another case in point, and I wish I could talk with this gentleman because he'd be a great eyewitness. His name is William Guy, and he lives in off the coast of North Carolina. And he reported seeing 14 lights above the Pamlico Sound Lagoon, again off the coast of North Carolina. And there is some video of this that you can see, but this is another what appears to be another fleet of UFOs or a fleet of lights, a cluster, if you want to call them, that was seen in the North Carolina area. And apparently he wasn't the only one who saw these, but was the only person who was able to gather these videos. And I mean, it's off the shore, you know, probably a couple of miles out there in the middle of the ocean. And I'm looking at the video right now, and it looks like about 14 lights, as he describes, definitely more than a dozen. And what they are there doing, you know, who knows? But they're definitely bizarre, and they're definitely drawing some attention. And as you mentioned, as you can imagine, there's all sorts of conspiracy theories that go along with this. Apparently these lights disappeared and then returned a couple of moments later, you know, which is very similar to some of the reports that we have recorded over time. Speaking of attracting attention, in Thailand, there is a central Thailand, there is a location that is said to house extraterrestrials who are sending telepathic communications, and UFO seekers are now heading to, or have been heading to the area, apparently at all hours of the day and night, in an otherwise laid-back town, to try to summon up some sort of alien communication. I don't know if that's necessarily a good idea, because you don't quite know what you're up against, especially if you don't know how to communicate with an extraterrestrial. You may be doing it in the wrong way and may be causing more problems for yourself. But there apparently are some individuals who claim that they have received messages from aliens arriving in spaceships. And apparently they say that the aliens apparently are Buddhists. And they are hovering over a huge statue of Buddha atop this hill in central Thailand. Government officials have they say from this story from CNN, of all places, government officials reportedly grew alarmed when UFO seekers began crowding onto Coachella Hill to see and talk with aliens. It's almost turning into an Area 51 situation. There have been dozens of people who have been, you know, accompanied off the land or told to basically leave because, you know, it is on private property. But, you know, all it takes is one or two or 10 people saying that they have been able to conjure up alien communication or alien dialogue. And it becomes a tourist destination for alien contact. You know, and it reminds me of the story that we had actually last summer. It's been a year and a half or so since we've had the folks from the Sandia Mountain crew, Sue Walker and Rev White Otter and others, who say that they are the translators for the Pontee, a group of extraterrestrials who were housed underneath the Sandia Mountains. And apparently, you know, people have said that they have been able to conjure up communications with these beings. You can even communicate with them on Twitter. This is located in Albuquerque, New Mexico, in the Sandia Mountains. And for those of you wondering, no, I have not had my encounter yet. I kind of forgot about it, you know, in the last 8 months or so. I was really on guard, you know, for pretty much the end of 2018, thinking I could have my encounter at any day because I was told I was on the list. And I told you I was seeing these things out of the corner of my eye and I was getting these visions, which maybe could be attributed to contact. But, I mean, there's been nothing since. I haven't felt this urge to go outside and look up, which I was told was going to occur. And I haven't seen any beings in my home, thank God. And I just haven't really experienced anything at all, friends, besides what I revealed to you previously, that I thought I was seeing things out of the corner of my eye, and I thought that I was getting these visions of some sort of thought that they were trying to put into my head. But other than that, there's been no contact. So I guess maybe I need to plan a vacation to Central Thailand, and I might be able to communicate with these extraterrestrials. It's worth a shot, right? We're going to continue with our program, UFO Eyewitness, with a very courageous man who's going to share his story of close encounters with flying saucers at night. And that's next when we continue from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest. I'm Jeremy Scott.
Want to chat with like-minded thinkers? Join Into the Paranormal Facebook group. It'll blow your mind. Never looking back. You're traveling into the paranormal.
Can I get a witness? We've got plenty of witnesses tonight. It's UFO Eyewitness tonight. I'm Jeremy Scott, and coming up next, we've got a gentleman by the name of Chris Brown, who in 2011, along with his son and neighbors, spotted UFOs on two separate nights in Sublimity, Oregon. And these, to say the least, events have deeply changed his life. So I want to welcome you, Chris, to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
My pleasure. So take us back to 2011. Tell us about your life at that point. Had you had any previous UFO sightings, or were these the first two?
Yeah, that's about really where I was at. It was, in 2011. It was August 19th. You know, I was my first encounter. Never was big into UFOs as far as out searching or anything, watched some television shows. You know, but just would, I don't know, wasn't anything I ever thought would happen to me, right? So here I was out watering my yard. It was in the evening time. I had went out and watered it. It was... I guess it was 8:55 p.m. when I started, because I had went out and watered my backyard first, my garden, and I had seen the clock on the stove when I went out there, so that's why I kind of know where I was at. So I watered the back for a little bit, and then I pulled the hose around to the front yard. It was a big, huge, I had about three big hoses hooked up to one, so, you know, a guy got clear across the neighborhood if I wanted to. But anyway, I always get kinks in it, and so when I was pulling it out to do the front yard, to get it all stretched out as much as I could. And I just noticed some odd lights in the field. It was just kind of a Sublimity area where I was at. It's just a town really surrounded by fields. And so, small town. The population, I believe, at 2,084. So not very big. And I noticed some lights that looked a little bit different, but, you know, the sun was still up, the sun was going down, but it was still kind of somewhat light enough that it just really didn't catch my eye. You know, and I had only been in the neighborhood for just a year, so it wasn't anything that I was, you know, I had a, you know, good eye on, and I, you know, a vision of seeing it over and over again, and kind of just knowing what the land looks like. So I, you know, pulled my hose back, watered my yard. I put a bunch of weed stuff on my yard that day and was trying to fix it up, and kind of that week really, and get a bunch of stuff taken care of. So I was watering damn real good. I was probably doing it, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 minutes or so. So when I pulled back to do the second half of the yard, that was a little bit darker than that. Say it was probably about 9:25 p.m., and that's when I got it out in the road again to stretch out the hose, excuse me, I could visibly see this. It was the first thing that caught me was the glass dome on top of the monstrous disc. The only thing I put the size on that, it's just an aircraft carrier. The whole, I guess, the size of it. I couldn't see the whole circumference of it. All I could just see was this huge glass diamond looking dome structure thing that was behind the trees. There was a big field, farmer's field, and then he had a line of trees. I don't know if that separated his property or from another property or what, but behind that line of trees is it dips down into a big valley. But the field goes on for miles, literally miles. But it just engulfed that whole entire line of trees. I mean, over three-fourths of those, you know, and that's probably, I don't know how long. I haven't been out actually to that field, so I couldn't say how long in feet those line of trees that are planted there. But I don't know, 300 feet maybe. And it swamped them. I mean, it was at least the dome on it was 300 feet in diameter on top of the craft. And I just was just, first of all, I was actually sitting there wondering if it was happening. That was the biggest thing that my first feeling of seeing it, of course, but the feeling I had was, is it really happening? And the crazy thing of it is, town just became dead. Normally at that time, you got people walking along, you know, it's the summertime, you got the couples down, you know, they could walk every night, certain ones I know, and cars going by. And the field that I had to look over into the farmer's field is the main road that connects Staten to and Sublimity, the town where I was at. And it's just constant traffic there because it's, you know, it's kind of a main road. It's not heavy, heavy duty, but it's heavy duty enough.
It was as if Earth stood still.
It stood still. It was like, and I was sitting there. That was the other emotion I had, was the emotion of waiting for somebody to go by so I could literally just jump out and stop them. I would have. And so nobody was around. The town just went completely dead. And here I happened to be alone, right, at the house at the time. Nobody was there. And so I started to run over at the neighbors because they were the only ones I kind of knew, but I didn't know them well. And looking back at it now, I would have ran right in the door, of course. But
now, are you running over there after this craft has taken off or while it's still there in the air?
It's still there. Okay, yeah, that's where I need to get. It was still there in the field. All right, and I'm sitting here literally feeling like somebody's got to see this with me. Right. So I got to, that was my biggest thing because I was alone. I was waiting, you know, here it is. And also to give me that feeling that, Chris, you're not crazy. There really is something there. I needed like somebody else to see it still. That was like that. I guess those were the feelings that I was still feeling like I needed somebody there else to see it to say, yeah, wow. So then I could say, okay, I'm not crazy. You know, and so anyway, but I went up to the door. I remember their porch light went on, their motion detector, and that porch light clicked. And I went up to go knock on the door, and I stopped. And I hadn't known them real well. And I thought, they're going to look at me like a deer in the headlights. What am I going to say to these people? Really, I just didn't know, because I didn't know them that well at that time. Now, sure, later on down the road, no problem. I'd be banging down the door. But I just, at that time, I didn't know them. And they, you know, reserved kind of couple of people, you know. And so anyway, they had their boys over there. They all the kids already moved out at that point in time. But anyway, so I just ran back out to the field. Why? I should have. You know, looking back at it, I should have just banged on the door, you know, like I was taking the house down. But I didn't. And I went back out to the field. It was, I think it, what it really was, is me thinking that I was going to see somebody else. If I see somebody else there, I could stop them because I knew everybody in the neighborhood pretty much was going by. So I figured, I'll get somebody and then I can, but nobody, like I said, you said it. Earth stood still. Town just was dead. Traffic was dead. Everything. And, so anyway, I was just sitting there looking at it when I ran back from the neighbor's place back out to the road. It's just, you know, 25 feet or whatever. And but then that is when it started to move on me. That is when the real feeling, okay, this is happening. And it moved just a little bit at that time. So then I remembered that I had my iPod. And by this time, I had seen that the light had clicked on the street light, you know, because the lights were going all the way down. I think maybe they might have been starting to turn on before, you know. But they were all the way on. It was all the way dark kind of pretty much by that point. And so I ran down to the stoplight to where I had this iPod that I got in that, I guess probably that Christmas before, but my kids were always on it, and I just never, you know, I never played it much, but I kind of was getting into it then, and Wi-Fi, and it's, I think, the big thing I figured out I could do. And so anyway, I was going to go down there and try to get video of it. I'm thinking, well, I got this. I'll try to cut. My hands were shaking so bad. I'm standing under the street light once again in the middle of the road. Nobody's coming. So anyway, I ended up going and sitting there just holding my one hand as the other hand shaking, trying to figure this thing out. So finally, I just gave up. I just gave up. I'm like, well, I'm missing this whole thing. It's just sitting right here in the field. It was still there. So then as I stopped and I looked at it, then it started to move three times back and forth. I'd say, 30 feet from my judgment, I guess. I was about a mile away. But the first two times, and then on the third time, it floated toward the mountain. I guess it would be in east, maybe. I was running back at that point because that's when it moved, though, is when I could truly see the whole size of the craft, because I could just see, as I was saying, I could just see the huge bubble dome before, but when it moved and I could see the whole size, it was like, literally, it was like close encounters of the third time, those big, huge, gigantic things. It was like Star Wars sitting in there and seeing at the beginning of it, and the thing just keeps going by and by and by, right? And it's really like it was. It was so big, but I could see the blue, I mean blue and white, maybe lights, red, I don't know, they're twinkling back and forth kind of on the edges of it. And so I was just, whoa. So I ended up going as it kind of went, floated away, and I was thinking, well, maybe I can get back to my house and I can see it on a better angle, And so I started to run back, and it was about, 50 yards away, I guess, 75 yards, maybe 50 yards. But anyway, so I, as I'm starting to run back and I look straight up in the, it was in space, that's all I could see. It was like a star, a moving star that was, it was going, like if I threw a rock, it was moving like that fast. If you were looking at a rock that I threw, trying to point with your finger, hold it, that's how fast this thing was moving in space. And I was, whoa. So as I said, I'm running back. I'm now keeping an eye on that. And this other thing's going, for all I know, the big ship could have been that thing, it shot off so fast or something. But anyway, I lost sight of it. So then I went and it was actually my dog who was in the house. And I heard a bark along with other dogs started to bark. And I just looked above my right shoulder up in the air, and over my corner came another disc, a smaller one. And it was went right over the neighborhood, simultaneously, right, went right over the neighborhood, all the dogs barked. Bark, 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 bark. It was like every house that went over, they barked. And then it went over to my one friend's, by theirs, place, because they got a big field there, too, on the edge of their property. It's just gigantic field. And their dogs were bark, 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 bark. And they weren't home that night. He was at band practice. So anyway, because I knew him personally, so of course I called and I talked to him. So yeah, I ended up going and I tried to, I contacted him when I was done, and he wasn't home or anything. They were gone that night. But anyway, it went over there. It stayed there for a couple of seconds, and then it got rebite, and then it was just gone. So of course that was the first night. That was the 16th of August. Or excuse me, 19th. And then, the next day, no one was home at the house. And my wife came home probably, 10, 20 minutes after that. Of course, I'm just laying into her. You're going to believe what happened, blow, of course, right? All she could do is just take it. All right, I get it. And I ended up going and the next day, I was just walking around the neighborhood. I was just hoping to find somebody that would, been out there. I figured, gosh, there had to be somebody, that maybe had seen it or something. So, I was just walking the neighborhood, as crazy as that sounds, and I'd see somebody out there, and I just asked them. And I asked one gal. I went by my Doug and Rhonda's that were over there on the corner and talked to them. and another couple that I knew. And then I seen a gal out there that was, and I talked to her for a second, but didn't really explain my gig. I just said, kind of made it like, did you hear type of thing? And she didn't say anything. So anyway, I, for the following nights, was all like sitting out the, well, I've been watering my yard, trying to take care of my yard. Wasn't going to give up on that. So I'm out there every night anyway. So I figured, well, I'm going to be out there every night. I'm going to get my phone, right? My dad gave me this phone that you could just charge up, right? And you know, digital phone, camera, or whatever. So that was a neat thing. So I thought, well, I'm going to video of it. So I'd go out there every single night on my wrist. I'd have this thing just hanging there, just dangling, just on my wrist with the video running, hoping that if something happened, I just would be going and I could just whip it right up and hold it and then be on it, right? So I don't know how many nights I had of me just sitting there, as it's looking on the ground, watering. So here it was, 11 nights later, it was this 26th, and it was late. My wife had a friend over. She was watching a movie, and then the movie had gotten over. It was almost midnight, and I had all the kids were up even. And so I needed to go to bed because it was late, but I said, well, all right, Colton, you want to go outside with me? You can water with me. He was always wanting to go out there with me, you know. And so I was going to let him go out there, and I used to stand at the corner and skywatch for me, right? Anyway, so he's out there, and I'm watering real quick, trying to kind of get it done. He's wanting to go in. He says his legs are hurting, blah, blah. So I'm trying to hurry up. So anyway, I go, and I get done. He's standing up at the curb. Anyway, I went up to the curb where he's standing, and I dropped the hose. I said, okay. I said, well, looks like it's time to go. So I went, and both of us turned around. I put the camera, took off my wrist. I put it in my pocket. Both of us, just as we turned around, we heard this pop, like we took a, I guess you just saw it. The best description is if you took like a light bulb and you threw it on the ground, you know, it makes that pop. And, it was loud, but not real loud, but with a flash. Excuse me. And we, turned around, and it didn't come into shape exactly, what it was at first. And then it did. And it seemed like, and it's that part there, you know, is really kind of where things do get a little bit blurry for me. I have throughout time, just that quick second from the fact when we turned around from the bright light, and then when it came in to description of what it was, I mean, I can remember it. But it's just that whole, how it came in to just a perfect from what it was, because it just, it was a flash, and then next thing you know, it was just there. And, you know, you've seen my picture before on Open Minds, it's all I can describe of it. It was like a bubble. Like if you took a magnetic bubble, and I'd say it was about 5 feet in, 5 feet in diameter, with the electrical current white on the outer rim of it, and it was spinning backwards. And what's inside the bubble was all this golden dust, like it looked like a static TV. There was all this golden dust floating around a sphere. A clear ball, I'd say, maybe about the size of a beach ball. And then what's inside the ball, we could see a red glow. Now, we couldn't see that the red glow was in a teardrop shape. I mean, it kind of did, but as it spun, it was spinning about, I don't know, it was going counterclockwise, backwards while it was going forward. It was going over the part of the road where they tore up and they put the fiber optic cable in that summer before. And you could see it was like it was sucking power, arcing power, maybe, from underneath the bubble part of the orb thing. But it went away, it spun away from us about 12 feet maybe. And that's when we could see that would be in the red glow in the middle was a liquid It was visibly, you could see it in a teardrop shape as it was, the whole thing was spinning backwards. The sphere was spinning. I guess the bubble around the sphere was making it spin. Is what I could see. Obviously, what was going on. And anyway, it went from, like I said, it was about 12 feet away from us, and it sat there for a second, almost like, okay. There you go, Chris. Take a picture. You know, we're so captivated by what we're seeing. It was, anyway. It's the right, and then it and it might have stopped there for 3 seconds, maybe, and then it went over to the iron plate manhole cover, and it arced off and made the same popping noise that it did when it showed up, and it was just gone. Had some sparks that rolled around that danced around on the manhole cover when it went off.
Fascinating story, and we've only just begun with Chris Brown. It's the Sublimity Close Encounter on our program tonight. UFO Eyewitness. I'm Jeremy Scott from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest. Stick with us.
Save your data and listen for free by calling 701-719-9703, courtesy of TalkStream Live.
Is Paranormal News. I'm Brad Bernards. A high school in Ghana was forced to shut down this week after an alleged ghost sighting sparked something of a panic among the pupils. The strangeness reportedly began in the village of Fumbisi on Sunday evening when a group of female students were studying in their dormitory. According to the teens, their work was interrupted when an apparition of a person suddenly appeared before their eyes. According to Coast to Coast AM, around 20 students wound up needing to be hospitalized following the scare because they collapsed during the chaotic scene, which some observers speculated could have been a spiritual attack on the students. Making matters worse for administrators, the ruckus led to protests among the other students who were calling for better conditions and security at the school. Oddly enough, the strange case of what appears to be mass hysteria is far from the first time we've seen a school struck by the phenomenon, as similar incidents have previously occurred in Colombia, the Philippines, Jamaica, India, Peru, Nigeria, and Indonesia, to name just a few in the last few years. Put an ear to the ground on Mars, and you'll be rewarded with a symphony of sounds. Granted, you'll need superhuman hearing, but NASA's InSight lander comes equipped with a very special ear. The spacecraft's exquisitely sensitive seismometer can pick up vibrations as subtle as a breeze. The instrument was provided by the French Space Agency and its partners. This seismometer was designed to listen for Mars quakes. Scientists want to study how the seismic waves of these quakes move through the planet's interior, revealing the deep inner structure of Mars for the first time. Evening is also when peculiar sounds that the InSight team has nicknamed dinks and donks become more prevalent. The team knows they're coming from delicate parts within the seismometer, expanding and contracting against one another, and thinks heat loss may also be a factor, similar to how a car engine ticks after it's turned off and begins cooling. Click on these stories at ParanormalRadio.com. I'm Brad Bernards with Paranormal News.
When I got out in the road and I could visibly see out in the field where I thought I seen the lights, I could see the glass, well, I call it a glass dome, but to me almost looked like a diamond dome. On top of this huge craft that I could only put the size aircraft carrier on, to me it seemed bigger. And I was just taken about it. And wondering if it was even happening. That was actually the biggest thing that was going on in my head was, is this really happening? Am I really seeing this?
Expanding your consciousness as much as you'll let us. This is Into the Paranormal.
This hour's UFO eyewitness is Chris Brown from Sublimity, Oregon. He's telling the story of the Sublimity close encounter and about a craft that he witnessed with his son, and a neighbor was involved. There's a second sighting as well that we're going to get to, and here is this craft seemingly right above the power lines, and it creates sparks, and then it just disappears, correct?
Well, actually, what it was, is it was on the road. It was... whether it's the put in the fiber optic cable that year, probably was that year before. And they put it underneath the road there. They just tore up all the ground and then they, you know, they resurfaced it. But there was, that's right where it was going. And so that was right by the sidewalk, which is in front of my yard there. And that was just 6 feet away from being able to touch it. It was from us. I always figured, you know, I didn't know too much of the Bob Lazar gig and how much of hearing about him. I always was under the influence, maybe since it was arcing power from the power line, maybe it would have. If I touched it, it would have melted me, killed me, or made me sick or something. I don't know.
So you think that this craft was getting its power from the power lines?
Well, I believe that what it was doing at the time to make itself visible to me was it was using the power lines as an alternative power source to maybe an arcing off of it. And that's what it really looked like it was doing, because when I was talking about it was the bubble that was going, that was around the sphere, the electrical part of it was on the outer rim of it. And on the bottom part of it, as it was going, and it was going counterclockwise. As it was going backwards, it was going do 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 do. It was making a chopping noise. It wasn't really loud. Oh, maybe it was loud. It could have been loud. What I was seeing, right? But it was making, as it was going back, it was choo 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 choo, making a chopping noise where it was coming off from the bottom of that, it was pulling that power from the bottom of that road where those fiber optic wires were put in. I'm sure of it. And we could see perfectly inside of it, because maybe that was the only way we could see it inside of it like that. Because, I mean, I've said this time and time again, it was so visible to me. It's as if I'm looking at everything right now. As I'm looking at the computer, I'm looking at the, like, just we both, my son and I, could see perfectly in it. So I don't know if it was using this fiber optic, cables that they put in as just a temporary, like I say, it was arcing power off of just those power thing in there. So I don't know. That's just my thing that I figured it could only be. But
all right, so Chris, how did this thing go poof into the night? Did it just out like a light? Did it fade away?
Well, that's where I said it went over to the iron plate manhole cover, and then it just was gone. It made the same popping noise that it did when it showed up. Some sparks whirled around on the iron plate manhole cover when it danced around on it when it shot off. Sparks were on the transformer that was on the power pole right up above there, that sparks went off of that, and then it was gone. So we're just like, my son and I, who, and he was only 9 at the time, and both of us just were, whoa! That's the first thing we said, whoa. And it was right almost about that exact time that the door opens to my house. And I figured, oh, my wife came out. She's seen it or something. She was, like, looking out the window, like, not wanting to come out until it left or something. I don't know. But it was far from that. It was just their friends leaving, right? They didn't see it. They didn't see anything. So, I don't even know what I said to her. You know, I didn't say much to her. I said something like, wow, we just seen something crazy, you know. But I think that's about really all I said to her, just because it was like, whoa. And then she left, and then I ended up going, and as she was leaving, the neighbor, which I kind of actually skipped through a little bit, but on the between the first counter and the second one, this is the second one here I'm on now. But the neighbor's daughter had showed up, and I was just telling her, oh, my gosh, you aren't going to believe what happened. Well, to get a little bit back, in between when I had my first encounter and I was asking people, I went over to Monica's next door, and I was telling her about it. And she went home and told her daughter. Her daughter had came back and said, oh, my God, my friend seen the disc that night, too, up at McCauley Mountain, right, which made me feel good. I thought I was going crazy at that point in time. So anyway, here she goes. Here we have this encounter, this second one. Here comes Brianna again home, her daughter just coming home late, you know. And I said, oh, my gosh, you aren't going to believe what happened, right? And I'm going to explain to her. And then that's why I asked, did you ever talk to your friends? And seen, because she was going to ask her friends to see if she could get more detail of what they had saw, because they had ranting to a bunch of them that they had seen it and watched it for 45 minutes up at the mountain, and they couldn't get any Wi-Fi. When they're trying to record it or something, or I don't know, and they got scared and they left. They packed up their stuff and left. But anyway, so she's telling me all this, that's kind of what's her story, she didn't have a lot of detail before. But as she's telling me this, all of a sudden, a streak, that's all it was. You could just see a streak went right by us. And it was a clear chunk of a disc that was shot right by us, and all of us was, whoa. Well, as Brianna and I were sitting there talking, my son Colton was still there. He wasn't saying anything, because at that time when we were talking, we did not realize that disc that went shooting right by us was slowly going over the neighbor, Chuck and Laura's house, about 40 feet up. And there was another disc, I guess. We only seen the one, but I guess there was two of them, Colton said, which he drew pictures on this MUFON report, and it's on the open lines and all that. And he could see up inside it, and they had the same kind of a dome thing. The glass, kind of a, what do you, like the Jetsons, you know? The glass structured dome that they had there, you know? But they were smaller. They're maybe about the size of the ones that I seen going over the smaller craft. So anyway, and he couldn't say anything. He was just captivated of what he see. He couldn't say nothing. He was like, it was like he was in a dream. And the only time he could go, whoa, is when it shot off. And we all said that. And here we are talking, and we just all needed to turn around, and we could have had seen it right behind our backs, right? So that's what happened. Boom, it shoots off. And so we're sitting up there. We kind of sat outside for a little bit after it shot off from us. And then, then we went inside. And things were kind of going, well, it's kind of an odd, you know, it's kind of scary anyway. So intimidating, I guess. So I ended up going, and we went inside. And then, I got on, started talking to a lot of friends. And then it was, I had first encounter. I was trying to find who I could tell about the first encounter. And then it was actually a friend that told me about the MUFON. And I got a hold of them and the supervisor, the head, whatever, Keith Ruel, you know who that is, I think, maybe. And who's the word of MUFON. So anyway, he came to my house, did a big, huge investigation, and then featured me in the MUFON, Oregon MUFON Journal. I mean, in the report. The Oregon MUFON report. And then, that took a little bit. And then, but during that time, it was a couple weeks, a few weeks after the encounter, every time I would go getting on the phone, I'd be telling everybody, you know, about my encounter, of course, be talking to everybody in the world about it. First encounter, be going great. I'll tell them everything in the world on the first encounter, no problem. Second encounter comes along about the orb, about what it looked like, about what it was doing. Just like I'm on the phone right here, Jerry. Clink, hang up on me. This went on for months, I guess. I'd say it went on for a good 3 months, maybe. And then it was about 3 weeks after my encounter. No, not 3 weeks after. A couple weeks, I guess. I don't know. I was out watering my yard, still doing my thing. And I noticed a black Suburban.
Uh-oh. Here come the men in black.
Well, what happened was is that I had the neighbor right above me, Chuck and Laura, and then the other neighbor's right next to me. He's a mechanic at the Chevy dealership. Now, I'm telling you about how my little neighborhood was connected to all these fields. Well, and the field right behind me was the Chevy dealership where he worked at. So he'd always come home on his lunch break, or he'd sometimes ride his bike in nice weather. But he'd come home, maybe bring a car that he's working on. So you would see a lot, and there's a big uppy neighborhood. There's all kinds of Suburbans. Everybody had a Suburban, right? There wasn't that. It was a Tahoe, for crying out loud. But this one comes along, and it's all black, jet black. And it has tinted out windows to the point of too tinted, just plain black. I didn't see no license plate on it. I don't know. Maybe I guess I really didn't look. All I know is it come by, it's down the street. And then when it was, got right to my house, it went by creepingly slow. We're talking, I could have walked faster than it went just to get past me, to speed up, to go up, to flip a GUI, to come back down around, to do the same thing, and then go purposely slow. Well, I caught on. I caught on, and I was upset they were screwing with my phone. Man, I was about ready just to pull my little hair I had out, right? So I gave them a dirty look when they came back around the second time and was going real slow, like putting up my hands like, okay. And then they went, like I said, back, and then they went and they sped off. And then one day, there was somebody sitting in front of my house all day long. Now, I didn't go outside because I was sick that day, and I was laying in bed, and I had the flu or something. I don't know what it was. But my wife comes in and tells me and says, hey, Chris, there's some guys sitting out there all day in front of the house. And, you know, I had been outside every single day pretty much until then. You know, I'd always been outside. And so the neighbor went over there. Chuck went over there. And said something to him, and he didn't say anything. He just drove off, you know. Now, I did hear later on there was some weird guy living in there. There's some pedophile or something, and there could have been some guys having to kind of keep an eye on him. So that could have been what it was, you know. So anyway, that was kind of, you know, really the gist of all what I had to do. And so, you know, I took a while for that MUFON report to come out, and then the MUFON report came out, and then, you know, things moved a little bit. Then later on down the road, I ended up going and doing some, doing the radio shows, and, ended up getting there and doing that. And then later on, I was interviewed for a few of these TV shows. And, well, things haven't worked out on that end. And so, but it's been a real big thing. As you know, Jeremy, you know, you said it. It's just changed my life. It's turned me into kind of a different person. And I haven't turned a different person, just, I guess, you know, it has changed me. You know, it's been a little bit of
In what ways, Chris?
Being fear of coming back, not feeling comfortable going outside, can't get it out of my head. It's been hard. It's been hard to let go. It's only been 9 years, you know, which is still a long time, but there's a lot of people going around and they're saying, talking about their encounters that happened 50 years ago or whatever. So, you know, it's still kind of fresh. you know, and it's been a big thing. I wish I could have. It's been an education because I didn't have a very, you know, I graduated from school, but only by the hair of my chin, right? And I didn't have a good education when, you know, and so when this UFO encounter hit, as I think I explained to you a little bit, is my voice is great, I guess. I don't know. Maybe not. But my handwriting's the worst. You kid? I couldn't write any better than a fifth grader. And so it's, you know, and spelling and all that. So it's been really hard for me to get myself across and to write to people and to get myself out in the UFO community. Because when this all happened in my head, the people in Oregon were looking at me like Zeus, right? The Morbin, the Oregon MUFON when they hit, they really, you know, they were like, wow. But you know, when you get out there and then you know, in my head, I was thinking like, you know, it was going to be a big thing. And, you know, I was, but I had to get out there and hustle and to get myself out there and to get my encounter out there. Because I'm searching. I'm a lot like, I guess I'll watch the Joe Rogan with Bob Lazar. Is I almost found with him. Maybe he needs to talk to me. I didn't work at New Area 51, but I can certainly tell you this, that I know exactly that technology he was talking about. And I don't know if what I seen was a government technology or mine was maybe an alien technology compared to what he worked with. All I know.
Or maybe one in the same.
Right there. One in the same. And you know, when I watched a lot of that, I seen a guy that kind of feels like he's searching because he's that sole person telling this story, and it's very captivating. It's very captivating and gets people in, but he's still looking for people that are working there to be on his side to say, hey, I've been there. I know that. Don't discount what he says. I was there. I've seen this technology too. I've worked with it. I know, you know, and that's kind of where I feel like, because when I'm coming into people in the UFO industry, I haven't found these people. I'm sitting here looking and looking and searching and looking, and I haven't found one person that has had any type of an encounter that we had. I kind of those same feelings that maybe Bob has. A lot of people have seen them far away, or they see them close, and they say, well, I seen an apparition in it. I seen something in it. Well, okay. So anyway, you know, where I had these little things floating around me, and they were just little bubbles or dots, where I took these pictures, and there were all these little, you know, but it wasn't anything that I saw that came out with a real scientific, you know, what Bob talked about and stuff. And the funny thing about it is the fact that it was, for the machinery to make it fly, you know, you think of like an engine, like a car, you know, you got, you know, this and that and this, and it was just so nothing to it. It was just a clear ball with the red stuff in the middle, I'm assuming was some red mercury or spin red mercury or something. What he called, or maybe element 115, and a clear ball and that thing around it. And really it wasn't, you know, what you would want to call gas tank or wires and plugs and spark batteries, and you know what I mean. And so it was all very just simple, very simple.
Well, Chris, in the few minutes that we have remaining, I want you to speak about the knowledge that you felt was passed down to you through these encounters, specifically as it relates to how UFOs are operated and even how crop circles are made.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the big thing. It's because that's a little bit of something I've never talked about a lot on the show. Is the ability, well, I got sick. Okay. After the encounter happened, maybe it was just me being just stressed out because I was just so overwhelmed, but I came down really sick with this heavy duty flu type of a like feeling. And that lasted for about 3 days, 2 days, maybe, I guess. And then I got a phone call from, cause I was still dealing with the MUFON at that point in time, and they were working with me, with this report they were going to do. And so I get a call. Here I was sick early in the morning where it was. But when I woke up out of the call, I can't describe it. I can't describe the way I feel. I felt very fresh. I felt very energetic. I felt like my brain had been just renewed. But things really came together of more of what I saw and how I started kind of figuring it out. And because before I was just telling the story of what I saw, because I'm just kind of that guy, you know, I can't sit there and give you detail on how things work because I can barely swing a hammer. So, you know, I'm just not that guy. But then, of course, another thing was YouTube. I had seen videos before on like the crop circles, and I had seen these orbs making going over fields that had made these crop circles. And this has been, you know, ships that have gone down that have been and have had these patterns. And then some of them have been, you know, not, you know, any odd things. But there are some of them that are very unique, that odd things are in the grass, which these odd things only come out to radiation poisoning is basically what it was, which would have been in the center of the sphere. And those things is when the grass has heated up from the bottom, been over from the blade, and that would be from the magnetic energy. And then the grass is aged. They say that the DNA in the grass has been aged. That's all radioactive sickness there is what that is. That's all what that is that's a slight burn of radioactivity. I mean, you see people that go through chemotherapy. Jesus Christ, they come out of chemotherapy, they go in there looking like a young Magnum PI Tom Selleck, and they come out looking like, you know, Rodney Dangerfield, right? So, you know, chemotherapy just killed you. It ages you, and anyway, so basically that's what it does. And so with the spinning of the grass look, and here I'm seeing this orb go by with the spinning, and I had seen videos that just, you know, it just comes in the clear. I mean, it's, you know, but the thing of it is with crop circles is there, from what I know, I'm not the professional, obviously, but I know that there's some that there are odd things, and there's others where the grass is just laid down. Guys went down there and did it and did a good job, but there's not any real odd, you know, when they're taking Geiger counter and tests and stuff like that, where it's, you know, it's saying, well, there's some, you know, and the grass has got things that's just different to it. And it looks like it's been, you know, radioactive. So that was some things that came out. Maybe I'm wrong. Once again, as I can only say this, I can just say what I saw. And, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm off on that. But
well, I want to thank you for having the courage to tell what it is you saw, because a lot of people who experienced this will keep it inside forever to the day they die. I know it's taken a lot of courage to share your story, and it certainly has changed your life. And although we don't have the answers to everything, something did happen to you, and maybe before the time that we both have on this earth together, we'll figure it all out together.
Yeah, maybe.
Thank you so much, Chris. Much appreciated.
Yeah, no problem. No problem.
That is a Chris Brown. He is a UFO eyewitness. I'm Jeremy Scott. Good night from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest.